Good morning, backstage. I'm here with a couple passages from Italo Calvino's Invisible Cities, one of my favorite books. I'll read for you Cities and Eyes, sections 3, 4, and 5. After a 7 days march through woodland, the traveler directed toward Bacchus cannot see the city, and yet he has arrived. The slender stilts that rise from the ground at a great distance from one another and are lost above the clouds support the city. You climb them with ladders. On the ground, the inhabitants rarely show themselves. Having already everything they need up there, they prefer not to come down. Nothing of the city touches the earth except those long flamingo legs on which it rests, and when the days are sunny, a pierced angular shadow that falls on the foliage. There are three hypotheses about the inhabitants of Bacchus: that they hate the earth, that they respect it so much that they avoid all contact, that they love it as it was before they existed, and with spyglasses and telescopes aimed downwards, they never tire of examining it, leaf by leaf, stone by stone, ant by ant, contemplating with fascination their own absence. When you have arrived at Phyllis, you rejoice in observing all the bridges over the canals, each different from the others, cambered, covered, on pillars, on barges, suspended with tracery balustrades. And what a variety of windows looks down on the streets. Mullioned, Moorish, lancet, pointed, surmounted by lunettes or stained glass roses. How many kinds of pavement cover the ground? Cobbles, slabs, gravel, blue and white tiles? At every point, the city offers surprises to your view. A caper bush jutting from the fortress's walls, the statues of three queens on corbels, an onion dome with three smaller onions threaded on the spire. Happy the man who has Phyllis before his eyes each day and who never ceases seeing the things it contains, you cry, with regret at having to leave the city when you can barely graze it with your glance. But it so happens that instead, you must stay in Phyllis and spend the rest of your days there. Soon the city fades before your eyes. The rose windows are expunged, the statues on the corbels, the domes. Like all of Phyllis's inhabitants, you follow zigzag lines from one street to another. You distinguish the patches of sunlight from the patches of shade, a door here, a stairway there, a bench where you can put down your basket, a hole where your foot stumbles if you're not careful. All the rest of the city is invisible. Phyllis is a space in which routes are drawn between points suspended in the void. The shortest way to reach that certain merchant's tent, avoiding that certain creditor's window. Your footsteps follow not what is outside the eyes, but what is within, buried, erased. If, of two arcades, one continues to seem more joyous, it's because 30 years ago, a girl went by there with broad embroidered sleeves, or else it is only because that arcade catches the light at a certain hour like that other arcade, you cannot recall where. Millions of eyes look up at the windows, bridges, capers, and they might be scanning a blank page. Many are the cities like Phyllis, which elude the gaze of all, except the man who catches them by surprise. When you have forded the river, when you have crossed the mountain pass, you suddenly find before you the city of Moriana, its alabaster gates transparent in the sunlight, its coral columns supporting pediments encrusted with serpentine, its villas all of glass like aquariums, where the shadows of dancing girls with silvery scales swim beneath the Medusa-shaped chandeliers. If this is not your first journey, you already know that cities like this have an obverse. You have only to walk in a semicircle, and you will come into view of Moriana's hidden face. An expanse of rusting sheet metal, sackcloth, planks bristling with spikes, pipes black with soot, piles of tins, blind walls facing signs, frames of staved-in straw chairs, ropes only good for hanging oneself from a rotten beam. From one part to the other, the city seems to continue in perspective, multiplying its repertory of images. But instead, it has no thickness. It consists only of a face and an obverse, like a sheet of paper with a figure on either side, which can neither be separated nor look at each other.